Bob, how are you this morning?
I'm fine, and so always glad to converse with you, Tom.
You know, it is great. And one of the reasons I want to bring this up first is I was excited when you announced you were going to run for mayor another term.
Well, I think I probably lost my marbles, but I thought we'd give it a try again.
How many terms will this be?
14.
This is none of my business. And if I'm out of line here, you just knock me around. How old would you be at the end of your term?
Well, let me see. I will be 88 in January. If I were elected, would be 92.
Yeah. I didn't hear the abacus clacking in the background once.
Yeah.
I mean, a lifetime of service, Mayor Butler. Do you feel, you know, after you've been immersed in this, literally, and moving up to the mayor's position and from back in the older days of politics, has this been a rewarding life for you, personally?
Oh, I think so. I believe that over the years we've accomplished some good. Probably not as much as I like to believe, but I think we've hit a good lick from time to time. I believe it's been to the benefit of the city and the people in the city.
But it's also it also takes a lot out of you personally.
It is something that you have to be dedicated to, committed to, and as you mentioned earlier, you get immersed in what's going on, and the thing about it is it's like a train on a railroad; it just keeps going.
But didn't you have to, as time went by, learn things about yourself so that you could preserve your, we'll call it, healthy immune system, psychologically speaking, to be able to endure what has become a harder profession as time went by? Or am I thinking from a politician standpoint, and that maybe that's not necessarily the case if you're a statesman?
Well, true enough. Of course, over time, I've had my fair share of arrows and barbs, and you build up an immunity. I always remember, to your own self be true, I could care less about criticism as long as I'm convinced that I'm doing the right thing, I'm saying the right thing. If there are those who don't like it, that's too bad. I'm going to follow a straight course as near as I can. And hopefully it'll work out in the end.
But criticism plays a vital role in the system. And I think once you become accustomed to the fact that an inherently adversarial nature exists in politics, and it's just the nature, it's not always personal, but sometimes it is. There's been personal attacks.
Oh, sure.
That I think, and I struggle with this, and especially my friends who are lawyers said, look, you always take everything so doggone personally. He says, the system is built to be adversarial.
That is exactly it, right. Good criticism, if it's on target, I have no problem with. I think good criticism, constructive criticism, helps the individual and helps the system eventually. It is only those that try to warp the truth, who misrepresent, fabricate, those are the critics that I don't pay any attention to.
Well, all those words you just used, Mayor Butler, now go into a single word of spin.
Exactly.
And I think the semantics of it as well, where we're going to spin this a certain way, mm-hmm. which means you're going to reshape it, massage it into the thing that you want it to be, which leads me to the next question. Has common sense totally eluded the political system, that everything is now driven politically, so common sense doesn't exist in a pure form?
There is good reason to believe that is true. Common sense should be common, but it isn't, sadly. One of the reasons is that too many people have their own private agenda, in addition to having an inflated ego and this kind of thing.
Is that why we see the absence of the word common good in the vocabulary on a daily basis?
I think so.
And very often when it is used for the common good, you find out that it's not really for the common good, but that was their desperation reach.
That's it, exactly.
I mean, let me give you an example. This is just one that just came to my mind here a couple of moments ago. When the federal government shut down, you saw at Crab Orchard, they put one single cone in front of the driveway and say you can't come in. I mean, the federal government said when we were shut down, we're going to shut down access to the ocean. See, that reeks of a naivete and lack of common sense. sense that permeates a lot of thinking now.
Mm, so true, so true. And you know, the government at any level, so often when there is a problem, they get involved in a case of overkill. They seem to think that, well, if a little bit of medicine is good, a whole lot will be better. And common sense does not prevail where it should.
Yeah. Well, you know, if little's good, then a lot must be better. I mean, and sometimes people think that with hard liquor. So, I mean, you have
yeah.
to – I mean, because, you know, there are common goods that have to be striven for. Let's use an example, and you may have to help me here because sometimes my history is a little sketchy. When you first started running for city politics in Marion, one of the items that you said, I'm going to get this fixed, is drainage and water and flooding in Marion.
Yeah.
Okay. Absolutely. All right. Now, one of the things that government should be able to do, we need to be able to put out fires to supply the water, and the bad water needs to be able to be carted away, and there needs to be a great police system. These basic components. But even the drainage issue, you've been fighting that for 50 years.
Oh, yes. Well, I criticized the incumbent mayor when I was running for not doing anything about the flooding. And once I got in the mayor's chair, I realized that it was a humongous problem. It was going to take an awful lot to get it resolved. So I started. Finally, when Governor Walker was elected, he came to town on a state tour, wanted to know if there was something he could do for Marion. I said, yeah, we got a flooding problem. We'd like to have some help in the state. He says, I'll have a survey made. Well, it cost $50,000 for the survey, and the result was, they said, you're right, Marion's got a problem. And he said, if you want it solved, you're going to have to pay for it yourself. It wasn't until much later, when Public Law 566 was passed by Congress, that funds were made available, and we received a $6 million grant to really take care of the biggest, largest flooding problem in South Central Marion. The thing about it is, I was in office long enough to make good on my promise when I first ran. It was 25 years later.
And see, and that's one of the – now, with water, I think we're a little bit different because – and this is something I learned on the farm. If I stop the problem over here, I'm going to create a problem over there.
Too often.
And that's what – that's exactly what happened to Marion, too, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so you had, okay, now we're going to have to do this, now we're going to have to do that. Well, man against nature is never an easy task.
That's for sure.
And what was – do you know what the tab was? Is it $6
million? $6 million.
Yeah, that's what I kept thinking in the figures when, mm-hmm. when it comes to that.
Yeah.
And, I mean, because there's realistic obstacles that have to be achieved. And the reason why I chose that water analogy is because it's not us against us, it's us against it.
Yeah.
And you know, so we do have that. But now we have it. We very often find the very obstacles to get where you want to go is because there's a pair of feet attached to a leg, attached to a body that's in your way. And that mind on the other side. And there's an adversarial thing that comes down into this. And that's where I see a lot of our problems. We don't see the world the same as we used to. Mm-hmm. We don't have the common denominators for some reason.
So true. So often, well, over the years, most everything that we've undertaken that would be good and beneficial, at least in our mind to begin with, there is always going to be somebody to oppose. And even after you finish and whatever it was you have succeeded, you don't get any apology from the critic or anything of the sort. They just look for something else to criticize.
Let's take this as an example to back up Mayor Butler's comments. How many people stifle this economy by saying, I'm an expert on oil and gas is going to be $4 a gallon by the end of this year?
Oh, terrible.
Right? And people took actions on that, and they did things in the market that were that way, and they made plans that way, and now we find out that's not the case.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there are always those out there going to yell wolf about something some way, somehow. And people must take with a grain of salt what they hear, what they see on TV or read in the papers. That's where common sense prevails on the citizens. They must use some reason. They must use their own intelligence. They cannot be spoon-fed because they may not be getting the right medicine.
Is that why we have a crime problem?
I think that is one reason, yes.
I mean, it is a contributing factor. When I was listening to you talking, I'm thinking, well, you can't be spoon-fed. There are a lot of people that want things and don't want to work for them.
Mm-hmm. And, too many.
And to be fair, the government's helped create those people.
Oh, well, of course, this gets down into the realm of politics.
Social management, social mechanics of trying to create, this has been going on in the government for a number of years.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. What it boils down to is the politicians want survival in office. And so they will do whatever they think is necessary to perpetuate themselves in office. And if it means putting in a program somewhere where people get a $10 check every day, then that's what they're going to do. They're buying votes so that they can continue in office. And it is sickening. It happens too much, too often.
I've been trying to give this some thought in particular and tried to big picture this in my own mind. And this is where I'm at right now. We all have a survival gene. I know you have it. I know I have it. Some people, not so much. But whenever I see politicians in this twitchy act of desperation, mm-hmm. I very often think that's the survival gene. It's just like somebody who's drowning, that frantic action to be able to keep your head above water, to be able to get out of the way of the coming truck, that manifests itself in political advertising, and that desperation is clear and evident in the way that we message.
Oh, yeah, so bad. Classic example of how these things can happen. Governor Ogilvie came into office, and one of the first things he did was to introduce the income tax. It had to be done. He recognized it. He also recognized the potential political risk in doing that. Okay, 4 years later, he ran for re-election. Dan Walker defeated him on the basis of he had put in the income tax. There was Ogilvie. He recognized the risk. He played the role of a statesman. He did what had to be done. And then Walker took advantage of it, which was so sad.
Over 10 years ago, you and I had that conversation that if we do a little bit now, we'll stop the coming problems in the state of Illinois. That conversation was over a decade ago. I received a lot of flack. I said, I can't believe that you and Mayor Butler are talking about races and taxes in Illinois. You don't understand. If we don't do it now, the immensity of what's coming, we won't be able to control it. Well,
exactly.
Here it is.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, once again, common sense, and that's where we were coming from. There was a problem; money had to be raised somehow. The income tax was the logical place to go, and I know I proposed that to Governor Blagojevich, and he laughed me out of the office. He had a fellow Tusk, Bradley Tusk, I think, was his chief aide, and he slammed the door in my face and said, there's no way that'll ever happen. Even when he was in office, if they had adopted some sort of income tax.
A quarter or three-quarter of a percent.
Yeah, it would have been way down the road on resolving the state's problems. Well, now we've got the 67% increase in tax, and of course they're arguing on whether or not it ought to be made permanent. In my mind, when that was enacted, that was too much, too late. We still got the fiscal problems. It's bad. It's sad. But once again, we got it, and I don't know what the politicians are going to do about it.
It comes down to this, and this is a thing I've been preaching, and I probably ought to turn up the volume a little bit on my sermon on this. I feel that Southern Illinois has been marginalized for a long period of time. I've been thinking and talking about this a long time. And, you know, when you have, I looked this up yesterday, the entire industrialized world has a higher rate of voter turnout than America. India, 91%, the poorest people in the world make their way to the poll, right? They fight and scratch every day for a living in some case, but 91%. Denmark, you look to every one of these countries, 67, 78, 91, 94% participation, but 48% in America, and that if Southern Illinoisans would have a 70 or an 80% turnout, that Southern Illinois would be viewed differently in Springfield and Washington.
Yes. It is so sad. People do not understand what they are doing by failing to do what they should. And I get so ticked off at people who say, well, I don't know if I'm going to vote this time or not. I'm not too interested in the people running or the issues, and I may just stay home. That makes me so mad. How can you be a true blue American citizen and have that attitude?
Well, here's my thought. You know, you and I talked about the these political ads and the spinning and this desperation to keep power. Well, if we know that exists, and you and I both know we're not going to change it at this point in the game, why not use it to our benefit? And the only way to do that is by making yourself a component in the formula, and that is, I'm going to vote. I know what your motivations are, and I'm going to use them for my benefit.
You know, some people say, well, I've only got one vote, and that's not going to make a whole lot of difference. Well, Governor Thompson was reelected to one of his terms in office by 6,000 votes. That would be one vote per precinct in the whole state. So that gives you an indication of how important each vote is.
Or you could look at that last election with Herron Mayor Vic Ritter.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there he wins by 3 votes. And that was phenomenal. Fantastic.
Yeah.
I don't remember ever seeing a local election that close.
No, that's the proverbial skin of your teeth.
Absolutely.
Hey, you know, I said anyway, I'm sorry I was got preaching at you about turning out to vote. I was preaching to the choir on that, but I still think that's one of the most important things we can do if we got 70 or 80% of the
American. Absolutely.
Southern Illinois. And you know what? People go, who? Where? What? And you know what? I think we'd see some things change. I think we'd see our neighbors treated a little better.
That's right. Southern Illinois has looked as an afterthought in Springfield.
Yeah. Marion Mayor Bob Butler. Mayor, I really appreciate your time again this morning.
As always, Tom, I've enjoyed it, and I thank you much.